Kate, Trevor, Felix, thank you so much for these incredible presentations. Basically, what you are presenting to us is a quite bleak picture of the world, one has to say. And my first question related to the three of you would be, where is still agency in this whole system? Because you mentioned the images have agency. Then to some extent one has the impression that the algorithms have agency. Then, of course, at the end, you and Felix, of course, too, was referring to the companies who are owning this knowledge, that they have agency. But sometimes I'm worried if the companies themselves are also victim of the system they are producing. So where is agency?
I think one of the advantages of really looking at actual practices is you can identify, you know, sites and procedures and temporal sequences, how these things come about. And you see how deeply contextualized and embedded in, you know, ideological, institutional, cultural, economic frameworks these things are. And often, if you cannot get access to the technology because it's opaque, because it's hidden under lots of layers and non-disclosure agreements and is rapidly changing, you can still get access to these other elements that are inseparable. So you cannot separate the technology from the environment in which it is being developed and used. And if you cannot get access to the technology for all kinds of reasons, you can still get access to that environment. So I think often in terms of a kind of political perspective, the focusing on kind of the power of the technology and the mysteriousness of the technology is also a way of avoiding to speak about a lot of other things. And for a lot of people, technology in this sense of a very advanced kind of infrastructure, not kind of simple technology, but complex infrastructural technology, it's really hard to get access to. But it doesn't mean that you cannot influence it, but you have to perhaps, you know, shift the layer or shift the layer on which you act.
I'm going to see if this is working. I'm going to be really honest with you, Bernard, is that I think that when we talk about agency, it is very seductive to think that we have agency by somehow opening up the black boxes or truly understanding them. I don't think either Trevor or I would really necessarily buy that. I think our sense is that the mythos of individual agency is very profoundly threatened by systems like this. And that in fact, at the level of the individual, there's actually very little you can do. And this is why I think debates like, well, just quit Facebook, is really just, it's completely avoiding the much bigger problem, which is that even if you do quit Facebook, Facebook has, you know, a little setting for you because it knows all of your friends and is already making assumptions about your preferences, what you do, even if you're not there. So my sense is that this takes us back to the question of collective agency and how do we start thinking about political agency for what is essentially a set of structural problems.
But in order to build up this collective agency, don't you need resources only the big companies have in order to address the issues they are producing?
Give it a go. Well, I mean, again, I think the question of how we have always expressed collective agency gets to the level of how we define politics. And it's really hard right now to think about how traditional forms of protest are not also ingested by these systems. I mean, right now, I'm based in New York City and the NYPD has given itself free license to use drones wherever it wants all of the time to collect images. So if you go to a protest, the likelihood that you are going to be recorded, that you are going to be recognized, is now very high indeed. So how do you start expressing political resistance? And I think there have been some really exciting signs in the fact that we're actually starting to see protests inside technology companies. We can look to the walkout of 20,000 Google workers just last year. but I think we're going to need to do a lot more.
But one of the points of Felix was that by now we are so entangled in these technological systems that you never know what it means, what you do. So how is political engagement at all possible? Because you never know what the frames are you are operating in.
That's a really complicated question. But I want to come back to this, something that both of you guys were looking at to various degrees, which is kind of deliberately creating spaces that are inefficient, right? Almost like deliberately creating blind spots. And I know this is some of the recommendations that you make or some of the policy work that you guys are doing, which is looking at, hey, maybe municipalities should not be using algorithms that are not auditable in order to do, you know, sentencing in criminal justice systems. I mean, that's a very specific example, but we can imagine the creation of, you know, saying that there are certain parts of society, particularly when it comes to public services and public goods, that we're just not going to use these systems within. You know, that could be applied to policing as well. And historically, we've done that. That's what a fucking warrant is, right? I mean, it's perfectly possible to kind of create these kind of spaces. And I think that's related to what you're talking about as well in terms of trying to imagine creating spaces where other forms of communication are possible as well. And I think that's a powerful way to start imagining it, is it's thinking about not so much as the creation of agency, so much as the creation of different spaces.
Different spaces, would that mean that you discard the technologies, or you use technologies for different ends?
I think that you would discard them entirely would be the idea. But the point is that there's certain kinds of political logics that are built, that are hard coded into the technologies that you cannot get around, right? And so the question is, do we want to have sectors of the society that are not subject to those logics or those political operations that are literally built in the technology itself?
Yeah, I mean, 2 points. Simply because you mentioned, you know, cities should not engage using certain, you know, algorithms that they cannot control. A very small story from a city in Sweden that hired a company to make their, you know, traffic lights more efficient. So they said, yeah, we have these, you know, complex algorithms that will regulate the flow. No, you can't look at them. They're too complicated and they're math and you cannot understand math. So they did it, because they had a proven track record and whatnot. And indeed, the traffic flowed more efficiently. But what they found out was that it completely went against their idea of how they wanted to manage the traffic, okay, is this working now? Yeah. Okay, so it completely went against their idea of how to manage the traffic, because it now was making personal, you know, individual cars more effective at the expense of buses. Because it was simply counting the number of vehicles throughput. So it was clear, you know, prefer cars. And then they had signed a 10-year contract they couldn't get out of anymore.
But on the other hand, related to that is, of course, the power question, because in these technologies, evidently, there is inbuilt so much power that the question is the asymmetry to create, let's say, technological free spaces to this power. Can you imagine that this asymmetry can overcome to some extent?
Thanks, Trevor. this is the hardest question. I think this is the hardest question. I mean, it's, again, how do you address a power asymmetry where we are looking at less than a dozen companies worldwide who can do AI at scale, really planetary scale AI? That is an extraordinary concentration of power, the likes of which we have not seen since the railways, and I would say even surpasses that. So in this sense, the power asymmetries are not only about huge power concentration in a very small set of hands, but they're rapidly gaining more and more insight and power because of the degree to which they can deploy huge amounts of insight into every one of us and into how systems work, including the financial system, including healthcare systems, you name it. So the abrogation of power and knowledge is happening very, very quickly and in a very rapid cycle. This means it's extremely difficult to start saying, how do we just like flip that particular asymmetry? I do think, though, that there are some really important conversations happening at the moment about regulation, and that we can actually start talking very seriously about how to regulate some of these technologies. Now, if you tried to have that conversation as recently as 5 years ago, people would say, oh, you're crushing innovation. That's terrible. I think it's extraordinary that now even technology companies, even the sort of the really big six in the US, are calling for regulation. So we've seen a shift.
So they are worried themselves about what they do. Great. one has to say. Okay. Perhaps my last question here for the podium before we go give the questions to the floor would relate our discussion to the political situation we have. Because basically what you were showing in your presentations is that there is a deep interference in the traditional ways we understand subjectivity, we understand society, we understand community. It's really transforming this. This is one thing. And the second thing Felix was especially relating to was this completely commodification of all social actions and thereby of individuality or subjectivities. So is that the real reason for the right-wing parties coming up at the moment? Because people realize they become objects of processes they can't control anymore. And they are just, yeah, the victims of these processes. And how could we, yeah, what could be done on this?
I think this is, yeah, obviously a really complicated question. But I think there are several elements that come together that make this particularly hard to address. I mean, I think on the one hand, we have an explosion of complexities that existing social institutions are really bad at addressing. Like representative democracy assumes that there is that there are relatively large homogeneous groups that you can represent. So this is one of the problems we have. The other one is that within this kind of opening of or lack of ability to you know articulate effective kind of a political will in these existing institutions, new institutions have sprung up that are doing it for us, so to speak. And they are using very powerful technologies that makes it even more difficult to understand what it is actually that they're using. So there really is a new regime displacing an old one that is has been kind of in a crisis for a long time. If you just look, you know, say since the 70s or the 60s or whatever you, where you want to put the, the date on. But until maybe the 2000s, these systems were in crisis, but there was really nothing that could replace them. So you were stuck in a situation that we were watching TV and thinking this is really a shitty program, but there was nothing else to watch. There was just TV. And now, after 2000, you have an explosion of other possibilities that are rapidly consolidating in very, very powerful organizations. So we have two tasks at the same time. On the one hand, we have to reinvent what democracy under radically different conditions, and I don't mean AI here, I just mean different social conditions, different subjectivities, that people, who are employed in one company are not all workers in the sense that they were in the factory. So there's really a dramatic explosion of complexity, and we need to invent democratic institutions that can address that, because what we have now is kind of very undemocratic institutions that are very good at addressing it.
Okay, so we open up to the floor. Do we have where do we have the mic? We take really now three questions, and you may answer the three questions. So there are here, okay, over there. Okay. We start there.
Yeah, this is about the training images, in a way. I'm pretty terrified about the scoring system emerging in China, for example, which kind of links to the insurance company tactics. And I thought, if it's hard to hide from AI, it's much easier to confuse it. So instead of deleting our Facebook, we can all have four different accounts, being different persons, having different friends, having religious views. And if we all do that, it would fall apart, right?
Oh, great example for a good question. Sorry for giving grades. There's another one here. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Hi, Simon. I'm a game designer. I make games about complexity. Question for you: what do you think the role of collective intelligence is as a form of opposition in this space?
Great. A third question, and then the answer.
Thank you. I want to address my question to Kate. And first of all, I want to thank you for the important work you're doing for AI conference, first of all, and AI Institute, which is connected to that. And I want to ask you, in a way, this is all the question is about how decisions are made. Yeah, it's the most like, and maybe you can shed light to that. How do you make your decisions inside the IE Institute? And yeah.
Okay. First question was, let's produce noise. What do you say?
Yeah. So you can. That's a tactic. I mean, so that's not a strategy. I mean, so you. Yeah. Sure. Fine. You can click on every single ad in your browser and mess up your metadata signature.
Okay.
I think that's not going to work out well for you, and that's also not a political strategy.
Yeah, I also would not advise to do that. Simply because just because they confuse you doesn't mean they will not treat you according to their confusion. I'm not sure whether that's much better. Maybe perhaps it is.
Great. That's great. But okay. Second one, collective intelligence.
Well, I actually wanted to just quickly refer back to that first question and say, just as a small light on the horizon to these sort of very dark responses that you just got, I think there is an enormous amount of gaming that is going on in relation to AI, and it's happening, again, primarily at the collective intelligence level, so I'm going to connect these two questions together. In many cases, pretty depressing ways. Certainly, we can look at what happened around the US and UK elections, where if you're a campaign manager, you can pay a bunch of Macedonian teens to try and manipulate news algorithms. So certainly, there is a lot of manipulation and gaming going on. But in the context of AI, there's a really interesting field emerging called adversarial AI, which is how do you actually start to confuse AI systems? And here I'm thinking of the work of people like James Bridle, who sort of created these sacred circles that confuse autonomous vehicles, so they just go in circles around and around and around. Or the really interesting algorithms that are essentially being used to intervene in AI systems. So I think what you raise is actually coming back in the form of how do you actually start to think about an adversarial relationship to some of these systems.
Third question was to you, Kate.
Oh, gosh. No, you should make intelligence, collective intelligence.
How do you make decisions?
You don't do intelligence. this is a really tough question, and I'm going to be very, very honest with you. When Meredith Whitaker and I created the AI Now Institute, we did it because we looked around and we saw that every single AI institute in the world was a technical institute. It was about algorithms, it was about data, it was about improving the technical systems. There wasn't a single one that was prioritizing the social and political and cultural implications of AI systems, even though these systems are being deployed at scale through so many of our social institutions. So we sort of thought, okay, it's time to make our lives a lot more complicated, and we're actually going to try and create an institute that is just looking at these social and political questions. But you've raised the really hard question, which is, what do you prioritize? How do you decide what do you look at in terms of criminal justice, healthcare, education, policing? Like, all of these spaces are simultaneously being exposed and seeing the introduction of new AI, in some cases just very basic algorithmic systems. So part of what we're really interested in doing is forming communities and networks of people to do this, because I honestly don't think that we can do this alone. And we actually need to have a lot of people working on these questions, not just from the perspective of research, which is my background as a professor, but also from the question of organized politics. And that has also been a really important part of what I've been seeing happen over the last year. So this is why we're going to need your help. But thanks.
So thank you very much. We have to stop here because we have to get out. Kate, Trevor, Felix, it was great to have you here. And thanks to the audience. Great audience.